Iambic Audiobooks presents Saving Angelfish by Michelle Matheson. Read by Exie Sands. 1. Max lies on the beach with one night clean. The sickness is beginning, and still she has an odd, vaguely familiar feeling of being alive. Considering it's a typical Los Angeles winter morning, about 50 degrees, and she's down to 100 pounds, not a lot of hair on her head, and coming off heroin, she's surprised she hasn't frozen to death. She can thank a Canadian postwoman's jacket for that. The ocean's rushing and waiting sounds put everything into perspective. It rumbles and sighs like it's lonely. She listens. The surf is a force to be reckoned with. Sometimes it's calm, it sleeps and dreams, and underneath, the fish, the plants, they move like eyes rolling back and forth under the surface of an eyelid. Other times, the sea swells like a heart. A big wave could kill me, Max thinks. She sees herself float on it. The sun is drying the salt in her eyebrows and nose. It's easy to appreciate these things when it seems you're going to die. Max sneezes. Her eyes water and she wipes them. She holds her hands in front of the sun to block the light. The waves come at her. They come in and go out again, over and over. The ocean is either very giving or it's completely nuts. The veins on Max's hands are green, same color as the Pacific. The idea of relief floats into her mind. Sticking the needle in real fast and hard, pushing down on the plunger instead of a careful tap, tap, tap. That would feel good. Then she remembers Ernest's line, "What would love do?" Max had looked at Ernest from where she sat, on the toilet, balancing the needle and the bag of dope on her lap, holding the warm crack pipe in her hand. It wasn't a test question. His mind wasn't made up yet. His white knuckles squeezed the doorknob. The other hand he put in his pocket because he wanted to punch the door or smash the crack pipe in the tub, but he'd done that before. She knew that he was asking her to make his decision. What should she have said? Love would never leave? She watched the tentacle connecting them fall to the floor. Her cells tightened, suffocating what light was left inside her. I don't know. She'd said. If he would just stop looking at me and shut the damn door, I can finish this hit. She'd had the urge to throw a bar of soap at him so he'd get out. Ernest, like he was sorry, like he was wrong, said, "It would save me from you." And then he left. The sand is hard under her body. Her legs ache. Inside her chest is a pain like something belongs there. How do people love one another? Max pretends she's the ocean reaching for the shore. No one is on the beach. She imagines it's summer. She sees kids and adults throwing themselves at the waves, diving in them, turning their backs to them. The waves just take it and come back for more. They never stop. Max daydreams about her parents. She guesses it's been almost 2 years since she's been home. Yesterday, she got up the nerve to call Phyllis. Phyllis was on her way to the oral surgeon. Max's father, Eddie, was there to drive her, so Phyllis really couldn't talk. Eddie wants Phyllis to cut off all communication with Max, like he has. Max imagines Eddie and Phyllis driving in comfortable silence in Eddie's car. They've been divorced 20 years now. Soon it will be high tide. The waves are louder. Maybe it's smart to know how much the heart can take and just play it safe. It's possible to kill parts of it, the parts that want to be loved back. That's what monks probably do. I think I'm going to live, Max imagines Phyllis saying, her blonde and gray hair sprawled on her pillow. By now, Max figures, the Vicodin will have taken the edge off Phyllis's recent dental surgery. Phyllis, a deceiver of age and time, she's 65, has earned her place in her rose-covered bed. Her station has little clusters of rib bones, remnants left by her Wheaton Terrier, Zelda,
red licorice, and a Christmas catalog containing potential gifts for her grandchildren, of which Phyllis has zero. A Tupperware bowl holding the remains of her regular breakfast of figs, prunes, and raisins soaked in gin sits on a tray at the end of the bed, along with her laptop. Zelda lies on her back, her head on the pillow next to Phyllis, enjoying a lazy rub. Zelda and Phyllis have exactly the same color sandy hair. Sitting in a white wicker rocking chair, wearing tennis shorts, striped socks over his skinny ankles, and perfect silver hair, a Buddy Rich tune stuck in his head, is Eddie. He is drumming a beat with his fingers on the arm of the chair. 30 years ago, he used to run with Buddy. He went to every one of Buddy's Los Angeles gigs. Sometimes, Buddy would let Eddie sit in. Eddie sold the drum set Phyllis gave him when he moved into his own apartment up the street 22 years ago.
"What about Max? Do you think she'll live?" Phyllis asks. She presses the old red rubber ice pack harder onto her cheek. Eddie keeps drumming, the tap of his foot building into a crescendo.
Before he stopped contact with her 10 months ago, he'd occasionally leave messages on Max's answering machine with no words. Just a rapid and gleeful jazz pattern, making the most of the tonal quality of pots and pans. On one recording, he did sing to her.
"I can't carry a tune in a bucket. I can't carry a tune in a bucket. I can't carry a tune. I can't carry a tune. I can't carry a tune. So I say, fuck it."
Eddie thought she had cleaned up, and eventually felt the fool when he looked at Max's eyes one night when she and Ernest were over at Phyllis's for dinner. Her pupils were pinned as if the sun were beating down on her. That's when he stopped talking to her.
"Max," Phyllis repeats.
Eddie drums a slow, steady beat, and the rocking chair becomes a metronome. Phyllis stares out the window and picks at her cuticles. The half a pinky finger she chopped off carving a pumpkin never bends because the doctor sewed it back on wrong. In task, she always appears good-mannered and dainty.
"I'm not gonna sit with you all day, you know,"
Eddie says. "Good," she replies. They both gaze at a vase filled with yellow roses, orange lacing the edges of the petals. The baby's breath indicates that these aren't roses from her garden, but that doesn't bother Eddie. He has no reason to be jealous.
"Have you heard anything from her?"
he asks. "None of your beeswax." Phyllis keeps staring at the flowers. She thinks they're pretty, but they change every day. If you cut the stems diagonally and change the water on a daily basis, they stay pretty longer. Phyllis is a painter of roses, and she will never grow old. "Actually, no." Phyllis looks at her painting of a perfect white one preserved inside a dark blue background and finally says,
"I haven't. I was making sure."
The ocean has now reached Max's sneakers.
"If I lie here," she thinks, "and don't move and let the water wash over me, I will stay clean today. If I can take the cold, I can be strong enough. Maybe the pill lady will be selling at the clinic. No methadone this time, thank you. Some antihistamines will help too."
When she drove by Eddie's apartment on the way to the beach this morning, there was a sign in front that said, "Sold." What the hell is he supposed to do? The basement of Phyllis's house had been converted into an apartment. After she divorced Eddie and married a sad alcoholic, and then divorced him too a few years later, she bought a house 2 blocks from Eddie in hopes that he would help out with Max. Eddie wasn't too happy about the situation at first, since it meant seeing Phyllis regularly. But eventually, he began picking Max up from school and even coming inside their house and talking for a few minutes. Max became a teenager there, and Eddie and Phyllis became friends. Years later, when Max lived in the basement apartment, she kept things under control, and neither Phyllis nor Eddie knew. But one afternoon, Phyllis found Max unconscious against the tree in the front yard, and at Eddie's insistence, she kicked Max out. Eddie could have lived in the apartment, but he's been content in his rent-controlled place for the past 20 years, though he may no longer have a choice. The old cottage-style complex is going to be torn down and replaced with a generic condo. Eddie's probably been waiting them out. Being 73 with a heart condition has one advantage. It buys him time from the new owners to find another place. The ocean has soaked Max's socks. Her feet are cramping from the cold water, but soon they'll become numb. She wills it and concentrates. Eddie says,
I looked at an apartment yesterday. It was dark and had a view of a dumpster. Awful. Today, I'm supposed to look at a retirement complex. Could be pretty neat. There's a community kitchen and dining room. For breakfast and lunch, I can use the kitchen. At dinner, they feed us, so at least I wouldn't have to cook for myself every night. I wonder what kind of slop they have.
You're really depressing me, Phyllis says.
Hey, stop it. It could work. I like spam and airplane food.
10 years in the Marine Corps had cultivated Eddie's appreciation for processed food. Max clutches the fabric inside the pockets of her coat. She's afraid that sitting around with a bunch of old farts talking about ailments and medications will kill Eddie. He doesn't like bingo or bridge. Max feels hot wax melting inside her chest. She wonders, when people get old, don't their expectations of others grow old too? Can expectations ever die?
You are not a normal old person. You don't belong in a place like that, Phyllis tells Eddie.
She drinks in the vision of her fresh roses again and falls more deeply into the Vicodin.
I want a piece of licorice,
Eddie says. He gets up from the chair. Now he is antsy.
Give me a piece of licorice. No, don't move. Rest your face.
Eddie leans against the high bed and tugs a rope of licorice from the tub. He pops it in his mouth and starts chewing loudly, smacking his tongue against the roof of his mouth, exposing bits of the red stuff.
You're disgusting and obnoxious, Phyllis says. Are you hungry? There's leftover Chinese in the fridge.
Are you gonna eat it later?
Does it look like I can chew?
Phyllis decides she'd rather be watching a movie.
I'll eat it later. I'm gonna go look at this place.
The old folks' home?
Phyllis's gin figs are mixing with the Vicodin, making thoughts hard to find.
Devil. I wish you wouldn't. God damn it, it's a place to live. Don't look at me like that. Okay, it's a fucking hippie commune for people who happen to be over 65. I'm just looking around, exploring my options.
Eddie never means to lose his cool, and he was supposed to be there to take care of Phyllis before she passed out.
Edward, will you stay here a little while? I want to talk at you.
Phil, stop it.
He had intended to stay longer, but he needs to finish a crossword puzzle, or watch the news, or boil some eggs for a tuna salad.
Don't, Eddie. I'm not saving the place for her.
It's been empty for 2 years. I'd think you'd need the money.
But see how things work out. Now it's available for you.
I don't need it.
Eddie, I would like it if you stayed with me. I mean, downstairs. I finally washed her blood off the ceilings and the bathroom and cleaned the stove and the drawers. Everything. We can paint the whole place yellow, bright yellow.
I was gonna do that.
But you never did.
Max likes the way Eddie looks at Phyllis for just a second before he kisses her on the forehead.
Call me if you need me.
Eddie walks down the hall into the kitchen. He peeks in the fridge at the Chinese food and decides he'll let it go for a while. Two full garbage bags spread open on the floor are attracting flies. Eddie ties knots and carries the bags outside to the trash cans still on the street. He rolls the cans to the side of the house and notices the hose isn't coiled properly. He fixes it and leaves before he can notice anything else. Phyllis lies in her bed. Perfect timing. Her television automatically turns on because she programmed "The Postman Always Rings Twice" with Lana Turner and John Garfield.
Zelda gnaws at a beef bone at the foot of the bed.
Max's legs are underwater.
Did she say her whole body had to be wet and she'd stay clean, or are her legs enough?
She wipes her leaky nose, takes deep breaths as her legs get used to the cold. The chill distracts from all the other aches. People can go lifetimes without just stopping for a second. Max resists getting up. She thinks of Eddie and Phyllis again, Ernest. He stood still, and everything stopped. Max rolls to her side, soggy, and sits on her knees. Her heels press into the seat of her pants. In the hard sand with her finger, she writes,
"I remember you. Please remember me like I remember you. I'm alive." She walks on her knees to touch fresh sand and finish. "I'm in here somewhere. You are everywhere. What do I do?" She is writing to no one in particular, but the ocean has always had answers. Max checks the date on her pager. She signs it, Max Gordon, December 16th, 2000. Still on her knees, she warms her hands in her armpits and reads the scribbled letters. The waves creep forth. Colder than she's ever been, she stands up and starts walking before she sees the ocean take another word. She'll go to Lenny's house. Hopefully he wants to be clean today, too.